TBRI.
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 TOVD.
TBRI.
TBRI, Trust-Based Relational Intervention.
TBRI is an attachment-based
trauma-informed intervention
that is designed to meet the complex needs
of vulnerable children.
TBRI uses empowering principles
to address physical needs,
connecting principles for attachment needs,
and correcting principles to disarm fear-based behaviors.
While TBRI is based on years of attachment, sensory processing, and neuroscience research,
the heartbeat of TBRI is connection.
Hello and welcome to the TBRI podcast. You're listening to Season 5, Episode 7. On this show, we talk all about TBRI, or Trust-Based Relational Intervention. We talk about different elements of the model itself, and also about how TBRI is applied in various systems of care and practice. I'm Emily Pickett, producer of the podcast, and I'm so excited to introduce today's conversation. Today, we have another installment of one of our most popular episodes to date, a TBRI coffee chat with Sarah Mercado and Kimberly Glotti. Sarah, of course, is our host here on the TBRI podcast and is a training specialist with the Karen Purvis Institute of Child Development at TCU. And Kim is a licensed marriage and family therapist, a TBRI practitioner, and a previous training specialist with the Karen Purvis Institute. We asked for listeners to submit questions through our social media over the last couple of weeks, and today Sarah and Kim are answering a handful of those questions. Our hope for these coffee chats is that it feels like you're sitting down with a trusted colleague or friend who just gets it, who's here to help you through areas of struggle or to go deeper on certain topics relating to TBRI. If you've ever had questions like, how do I find support as a foster parent? Or how do I get my organization on board to implement TBRI? Or is there any room for boundaries or consequences in TBRI? These are just some of the questions that Kim and Sarah tackle in this episode. In fact, they had so much to say that we are splitting their conversation into two episodes and will release the rest of their coffee chat next week. So whether you've been on your TBRI journey for years or if you're just getting started, this conversation is so full of wisdom and grace and practical tools. So go ahead, grab your cup of coffee and settle in for part one of this conversation with Kim and Sarah.
Oh my gosh, Kim, I have been looking forward to chatting with you for a long time and I'm so excited that you're back with us.
Yes, friend.
How are you? How is life?
I feel like I want to sing.
You want to sing? Okay. Do it.
No way.
Bet you won't.
Life is good. Yeah. I love that we are staying connected and continuing to serve populations all over through the lens of TBRI. So I am so happy to be here with y'all. I don't know what to do. So highlight of my week.
I'm the same way. And I love staying connected and I'm so excited about the work you're doing. And I know that it's just so impactful. And so I'm excited for our conversation and I miss you every day, but I'm super excited for all that's happening in your community because of the changes you've made with your work. So we have some questions. They've been submitted through different platforms to us. So are you ready to jump in?
Yes, ma'am. You know my slogan, stay ready so you don't have to get ready.
All right. Okay, so Sarah W. asked, what is the best place for a therapeutic foster parent to start, especially when they have minimal state or organizational support? So they're wanting to do TBRI, but their organization doesn't really do it and the state is not encouraging it. Any ideas?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say, you know, someone might think I would say start with connecting, but it's not. Well, yes, connecting, but connecting outside. I would say find resource, find the help. So if you are going to embark on this journey, if you want to do it in a comprehensive trauma-informed care way, AKA TBRI, then go ahead and educate yourself, look for community connections, reach out to other organizations or people who are trained. I don't know where this person lives, Sarah W., but a lot of communities have community initiatives where there are training opportunities. So I would say connect, but connect to help and resources in the community, because you will need the support and education before, during, and after you bring those loveys into your home. So get the information, get educated, and so you can do the job in the best way you know how.
Yeah, absolutely. And Kim, we actually had another question come in that was about where can I find free resources for TBRI? And mm-hmm. so we'll actually link a list of free resources in our show notes that people can find from our website to our YouTube channel and so on and so forth. So we'll have that all listed that she could also check into for resources for herself. And then I really mm-hmm. love that you said, just get into the community, because hopefully with as many practitioners as we have out there and as many people working hard, that she can connect within her community to people that understand TBRI and understand working with our kids who have experienced mm-hmm. so much harm.
Mm-hmm. And then, Sarah, I would also add, I don't want to, you know, be remiss if they were thinking about, no, that was not my question. I really uh-huh. wanted to know about the kid.
Right.
So what I would say, having worked with therapeutic foster homes, is really start with both nurture and structure. Mm-hmm. Don't lean too far either way. Mm-hmm. The structure allows our kids to feel safe. And the nurture allows them to be seen, feel seen, and know that they are precious. Mm-hmm. And so even from day one, helping them to understand what's happening, what's going to happen, kind of the way your home works, setting up schedules and things like that with them, not for them. So connecting is another way you can build that nurturing environment, that their voice matters. So start from day one, letting them know where to find extra toilet paper. You know what I mean? It's,
yes.
it's the things that matter when you're walking into a home that is brand new to you, and the smallest things can be dysregulating. Like, I don't know where that toilet paper is. Mm-hmm. So a tour of the home, who everyone is, and all of that jazz, it sounds simple, but it can be really meaningful, and just begin in small ways to disarm that fear that mm-hmm. is likely to be present in those early days, on those early days. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that. And I think also mostly because this is where I needed to start, because I had a harder time connecting because of my own history and my attachment style, was I was able to jump in with the empowering principles. Uh-huh. And I love what our friend Rebecca Randall said when she said, you know, when I am having a hard time connecting, the empowering principles can help catch us for regulation until I can get myself regulated. The empowering principles can help us all, and then we can connect. And so I love the idea of really setting up the environment and setting up the body for success. And mm-hmm. and you can do all that before the child has ever come into the home. So you can already have your snacks in a place where they can access them. You mm-hmm. can have that toilet paper in a place that's easy to find and locate, right? Like, you can do so much of that in mm-hmm. preparation. So that also calms down, you know, the caregiver's stress system, because they're not having to prep all that as soon as a kid arrives.
Yes. So yeah.
You can kind of be proactive in that. So.
Yes. I love that. Starting with a meal is always good. I mean, people always connect good. Around food, you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
When I start with a meal and their favorite meal and everyone's together, but maybe the meal is at 6 o'clock, right? So uh-huh. that's that whole, no, we're not going to eat at 3. We are going to eat at 6.
Right.
And guess what? It's your favorite. That's yep. that. That's a little bit of nurture, but also a little bit of structure
yep.
in there.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
And empowerment.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you need a snack before then, that's fine. But the yep. meal will be ready at 6. Yep.
Love
I
it.
Love that. Awesome.
Okay. So we have another question, and this one goes to you because this one is also from Sarah E.
Uh-huh. Okay.
How do I sell TBRI to my organization to get them to implement? And then I'm going to throw in another one. Josh okay. S. wanted to know some of the practical ways to get the community on board. So like the school. So how do we sell it? But then some practical ways to really bring them all the way in.
Man, it's hard, right? Because especially if you know TBRI and you're dealing with an organization that doesn't and doesn't appreciate it, that is potentially so frustrating. And I think one of the things to do is start by seeing if they'll accept any training. And I typically like to start with training about the 5 B's and trauma, because that is a place where we can develop compassion for our kids. And if we're having a hard time changing as an adult, which, you know, I've been very honest about my journey, that was a very hard transition for me to change the way I interacted with kids. The change for me was to understand the science behind the impacts of trauma and to understand those 5 B's and how it impacted it. And then I was able to see, you know, the bigger picture and begin to like just add little tiny tidbits of change to really get change moving. So, I mean, I think one way to just start is seeing if they'll just accept even an hour training about trauma, an hour training about the 5 B's and those impacts. And then you can follow up with meetings about, well, here's the places we can start to just do some small things. Like, we would never go to an organization and say, okay, right now you're going to take all of TBRI and implement it, and that's it. End of story, right? Like, we don't, as you know, right? Like TBRI, it would be really nice if we could do that, but it's a journey and it takes some time and starting really small. I don't know. Do you have any other ideas on kind of the convincing of the organization?
Yeah, I remember specifically when we were working in regionally and doing some kind of regional, you know, pulling folks together in the area, and some people would be really on board, but some of those kind of key stakeholders, we wanted to be on board, but they weren't. And the idea is, right, are they just, you know, making our lives difficult because we know they're their key stakeholders and they don't want to get on board? But no, when we take the TBRI mantra and see the need, well, maybe they don't have the capacity right now and timing to take on this new endeavor. Maybe it's a budget issue. Maybe it's a staffing issue. Maybe they're in the middle of audits or leadership changes. And so not seeing the no as just a door closed, but maybe even seeing it as in, okay, well, what is their need? And is there a way that TBRI can meet their need? And if we sell that, then well, heck, everybody wants a little less stress in their lives. Amen. And so, you know, if it's about school and they're, you know, having issues with suspension rates and expulsion rates, well, we bring in TBRI as the answer or a possible solution to reducing those numbers. Mm-hmm. Okay, mm-hmm. Well, now we can talk, you know?
Right.
Now, now I'm willing to listen.
It is true. I mean, I can remember when as an organization, we decided, so this is beyond the, how do I sell it into the, how the heck are we going to do this? Like as a leadership team, we had decided to be committed to it. And we would go into our little tiny boardroom that we had, and the six of us on the leadership team would sit around, and it was like a battle, right? Mm-hmm. Like once we decided to do it, the next steps were, I mean, it was hard because you got to figure out where to start and what to do and what policies have to change to be able to do this. And right, it's a lot to get going. But once you decide,
yeah,
you can begin to move that needle and you can begin to see the changes. And one of the lessons for me was learning, you know, I was like a regional director and had just a whole bunch of foster families and kids underneath my supervision. Well, our CFO had zero kids and families under her supervision. She was responsible for the checkbook, mm-hmm. right? We weren't caring about the same things. And uh-huh. so until I could begin to understand the budget and the implications for why I couldn't just go out and buy this really great weighted blanket for this kiddo who's struggling, and she couldn't see until she could see the need for that kid to have that blanket and us to figure out where to get the money for it, right? Like it took us all being willing to get around the table and understand each other's responsibilities so that we could meet the needs of the kids and families and the needs of the organization, right? Because we do have to keep the doors open if we're going to serve kids and families.
Yeah.
And so I can remember we had a moment where she and I got into an argument in a senior leadership meeting over whether or not we were going to spend the money to support a kid's needs. And I was fighting for the budget and she was fighting for the kids.
Wow.
because we finally understood each other, right? Yeah. And so we don't always have to expect that everybody making all of the big decisions can understand this. But if we continue to communicate without frustration, I think we can get there. And so it's not her job to worry about those things. It's her work, her job to worry about making sure we have enough money to keep going. And I think that takes, it takes a lot of work to get to those places and small amounts of education and really bringing people into the whole conversation and into the success stories. Mm-hmm. And so I think it takes some organizational leadership to get that going. I think it also takes speaking to what's important to that role. So if, like you said, they know, oh, maybe we end up with fewer, runaways, or we end up with fewer restraint holds, or we end up with less verbal aggression. Like those are things that sometimes speak to our grant writers, mm-hmm. which means they want to be more invested in what we're doing. I think we have to figure out how to speak to all the right people to get our needs met.
Yeah, I love that. Really, we all have the same goal. We're coming at it from a different angle, but
right.
we have more in common that we have alike, usually, if you're right. working at an organization and
right.
finding that common thread. Darren would often say being of one mind, right? And focusing there mm-hmm. And realizing, right, we're connected in this way. We just have to negotiate, figure out how to do it. Yeah.
Right. And I think I've seen, like Joshua specifically asked about in our schools. And I think, if the administration is not on board, you can change those numbers within a singular classroom. Mm-hmm. Right. And so that teacher that is willing to go about doing TBRI within the framework allowed by the school is going to have different outcomes than a teacher that's using more of a punitive based discipline. Right. The behavior charts and all that. And the school will become curious about what's going on, right? You see some of our kids that are really struggling and they're not ending up in the office anymore. Allow them to become curious and come see what you're doing, right? And so we can change from the bottom up. It just takes a little bit more time. And mm-hmm. so I would just say, like, you and I talk about it all the time. Keep the main thing the main thing.
The main thing
is sitting right in front of us, and it's these kids and families and the staff that we're serving, even the adults we're serving. If you're in leadership, keep the main thing the main thing. How do we support them through a TBRI lens in order to bring, healing and wholeness to their lives? And that's our ultimate goal. And we don't need to get distracted by all the things that don't do that. We just have mm-hmm. to keep going.
And you know what? I think it's when we get distracted, when we stop keeping the main thing, then there's really something else going on.
That's right.
We're really dysregulated. We're really mm-hmm. not being mindful. This is our history pushing up on the scene. When we mm-hmm. start, getting in these power struggles and not focusing on the kid or the main thing, then that is a hint right there. Like, oh, okay. We might need to pause, uh-huh. reflect, kind of go back and try again, like a little redo right there.
I feel like you just said that's about me. I don't appreciate that, Kim, very much.
I don't know. What are you talking about?
It is true, though, right? Like all that frustration starts to bubble up. What's happening with me right now?
Yeah.
Right. Yep. And for me, it's usually I feel out of control.
Yep. Yep.
Right? And I really love that feeling, by the way. I'm pretty good at it.
I love. So this is the one. This is according, in response to Joshua's question too. I love that the same framework that we apply to a child who is having a hard time, we just look at our whole organization the same way. Mm-hmm. It's just at a kind of a macro level. It's the same. What are the need behind the behavior? We can mm-hmm. stay curious, right? When we meet the needs, mm-hmm. If it's regulation, are people fatigued, tired, scared, and that's why they can't perform? It's just all the same. Is there a lack of felt safety mm-hmm. and trust? Do your staff feel valued and important? Mm-hmm. Does that get in the way of seeing, keeping the main thing the main thing?
Yep.
I mean, it's just wonderful.
Yep.
Which is I love that so much.
I do too. I remember when, I don't know if you remember this, but we were at a practitioner training and I was like pretty dysregulated one day. That doesn't happen very often. And you just looked at me and you were like, why don't you go for a little drive? And I'm like, because I have this responsibility and I have to do this. And you were like, we're here. Like your whole team's here. Why don't you go for a little drive? And I was like, oh, it turns out I can actually do that because I know I've got this safety net around me that's going to make sure the next thing happens or whatever is bothering me. And what, like 15 minutes later, I come back, I've had some fresh air. I've had a little bit of movement. Right. And it's like the train kept moving. Right. Like, because we are grounded and looking out for the big picture and looking out for one another, then I can be a dysregulated adult who can go take care of my needs because my friend looks over and is like, hey, like what you probably can't see right now is that 15 minutes will do you a world of good. And then that will do all of us a world of good. And I just think it's a beautiful picture of how we can really come together around a cause because this is hard work.
It's hard work. And at the organizational level, what does that look like? Mm-hmm. It looks like, you know, funding pressures, staffing pressures, and you realize that the people who are on the front lines are feeling it. They are also feeling that pressure, and more demands is not going to help. So what do you do? Oh, right. Maybe we take the day and play. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, maybe this is time for a retreat. Mm-hmm. Oh, maybe we're bringing in ice cream sundaes at our staff meeting. Mm-hmm. We're not going to talk about any of that. We're going to talk about, you know, something totally different. Mm-hmm. That 15 minutes, that small input can have big impact.
Big impact.
And keep the train moving.
Yep. We did. Yeah. We used to do Friday movie days and everybody would go into our training day room with their laptops and we just turn on whatever movie that, you know, if a family walked in, it was appropriate. And people would sit there and work and do their notes and laugh. And we had popcorn and we just did Friday movie days at the organization to give everybody a time to be together at the end of the week and like to celebrate we've made it another week. And so you can add fun. And
I love that. Yeah,
easy, cheap ways. Just bring in a movie or log into your Netflix or whatever. So
I love that. And just, we're not going to stay on this question, but I was just thinking, I would probably come into the movie room, bring my laptop and still do my notes, right? Mm-hmm. Still work. Yeah. Why? But it's just that fact that it's an offering that you see me and you want to provide this other. So you're taking some of that pressure off and I want to get my work done too. Yep. But it's just the idea of being seen. And how cool is that?
You know, the funny thing is when your employees feel seen, heard and valued, they want to do the work. They want the people they're serving to feel seen, heard, and valued. Mm-hmm. They're not going to come in and take advantage of, you know, coffee time in the morning or a movie on Fridays. They're going to sit there and get their work done because they feel how they want to help other people feel. Because at the leadership level, we're doing our work, right? And we're making it happen.
Whew, so, that was good. That was a good question, Joshua.
That was good. All the people. Okay, Kim, I'm going to read the next question. It's pretty long. It's got a lot to it. And so I want you to bear with me, but I think there's so much in it. And I think that people are all struggling with this. So I was going to paraphrase it, but I think it's good. So, okay. Mm-hmm. Rebecca writes in, I would really like to like more practical examples of consequences. If it is okay to use that word, one that looks like boundaries, that is just one area I feel like we avoid and it does us no favors with parents. Like I know we don't promote taking the cell phone if a kid says a cuss word or breaks some unrelated rule, but what do you do with all the cell phone things when it's actually causing the problem, i.e. risky sexual behaviors, addiction to social media, gaming, or a child brings home all Fs? What do you do regarding correction after the connecting and empowering pieces? I've heard some TBRI practitioners say, well, if you do the other two things, you won't have to correct. And that's not true. There are children that still need correction. Is it ever okay to use a consequence? Also, some talk about rewards might be helpful. If the bar is set so low that there's always at least some reward to progress, can that be helpful? I also think some talk about how some privileges just have to be earned might be helpful. If a cell phone is a problem that is serious, then may it be taken completely off the table until that becomes a place where they responsibly can handle it, or whatever the privilege is. Okay. I think I got the heart of it all.
Mm-hmm.
So the first part was really about consequences. And this sounds to be specifically around cell phones. And, I know for me, I'm one that is really great at saying, you can do this, or you can give me your cell phone. So what are you thinking? Consequences in general, and then maybe specifically around cell phones.
Mm-hmm. Let me tell you what not to do, which is what I did.
Okay.
Before TBRI, I gave my child a cell phone so I could have leverage to take it. That was horrible. Don't do that, y'all. Don't do that.
An honest moment from Kimberly Gloudy.
Oh, man. Yes, yes, yes. It is okay. It is not only okay, it's necessary for us to provide, you know, consequences. Correction is our structure setup. It is how we keep people safe, how we stay safe. I mean, think about in our world that we live in, if there were no, justice system, we would have way more crime probably. If I didn't fear a speeding ticket, I may drive a lot faster and potentially hurt people.
Right.
And so the officer who pulls me over, should he be nice, is not doing a bad thing. He's going to give me that ticket if I were speeding, but I'm not. And I understand it is about safety. It is not because of anything else. He's saying, I'm warning you, this consequence is a warning that if you keep going down this road, if you keep repeating this behavior, you are highly likely to cause harm to you or someone else. And because the officer cares about public safety, then it is his job, her job, to keep us safe. Same thing in our homes. The rules, the response from breaking rules is all around how is the caregiver ensuring safety of the kids, the environment, and everyone else. And so cell phones taken away where there is risky or dangerous behavior to cell phones makes sense. Now, taken away forever because you know that that's what's going to flip your kid, your motive is wrong.
Right.
Your motive is wrong because that's now you're doing it for for punishment. I'm going to show you. Let me see if I can make you hurt. No. The idea is around safety, right? Maybe it's not to take the cell phone totally. Maybe it's to block certain apps, or maybe it's if the kiddo is having a hard time using the cell phone appropriately at night and without supervision, maybe they have the cell phone all day, but when they come home or at night, then the cell phone comes up. Until we can teach, until we can support proper usage and healthy usage and safe usage going forward.
Right.
So it really has to be around, and listen, this is physical safety. This is emotional safety. This is relational. All of those things are important. So we're not just talking about physical safety. I know, a lot of the tweens were in, after school being mean and doing some harassing and bullying via texting, right? That gets real dangerous quickly. So it's not really about the cell phone use, but the cell phone is a vehicle for that.
Right.
And so we want to monitor the vehicle. We want to teach what's appropriate, not just around the cell phone, but how do you engage relationally with people? It's about, being mean and not being mean, but treating others respectfully and using the phone respectfully. So safety, 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 safety. If it's not about safety, then again, I would say check your motive. Take a pause, regroup, check in with yourself. What's my motive here?
Right.
Do I want them to hurt? Mm-hmm. And if the answer is yes, and listen, sometimes if we're honest with ourselves, that answer in the back of our head is probably a little bit sort of kind of maybe. Mm-hmm. And if that is the case, it's okay. Check it. Check right. it right there.
Right.
Before you go and give a different consequence. Because
right.
my job is not to hurt you. My job is to help you.
Right.
And protect you and keep you safe.
Yeah. I grew up in a very like the justice, the scales of justice are balanced at all times. And so for me, that was a huge adjustment, was to get into, I'm giving a consequence to protect you versus I'm giving a consequence so that I can feel better about what you just did that insulted me, hurt me, embarrassed me, right? Like, it's not about me. This is about helping these kids be safe. And I, as you were talking, I thought, if you don't mind, I'll share a story of, I was working with a family and they had been through a lot to get this teenage girl to a place of being able to have a cell phone. And she, you know, they had done the safety contract with her. They had done all these things. They had talked about all the fear and that they had and the harm that's available once you're engaging in social media, and had all the parameters in place. And don't you know? And she got right out there and ended up engaged in a conversation with somebody pretending to be a teenage girl who turned out, they found out later, was indeed like a 40 something year old male. And you know, immediately when they called, it was like, we're taking away her phone, like, you know, just so angry and so hurt. And of course, right, she might be 14, but we also know developmentally, she's probably delayed and missed all the markers of what was going on, because that's what these predators do. Mm-hmm. That child also had experienced so much loss and disconnect that taking away her phone, in my mind, that is actually criminal too. It was like the one way she kept in touch with her biological brother, who she had safe contact with. It was like her one connection to her biological family that was safe with her. And so we had to really come along and figure out, how can we keep her safe and keep her connected and put in the parameters to make this okay? And they ended up taking the kind of internet privileges off of her phone. So she could still talk and text. They could still access her when she was away from them at school or events or whatever. But she could not access those things unless she was on a home computer in a shared space. Right. Mm-hmm. And so they had to put in, because our kids are going to have access to all of these things. And if we don't take the chance to teach them to be safe versus just snatching it away, which for me, Kim, that's the safest thing I can do. Just give it to me. I don't have to be afraid for the next week at least. Right.
But that is easier. It's easier.
Yeah, for sure. And so I like that you came back around to that, of like, how do we meet all of the needs? I need for her to be safe. We need for her to be safe. She needs for her to be safe. Mm-hmm. But all of her safety is not compromised by having the phone. Right. Yeah. Some of her connection that's very important is in there.
The TBRI podcast is produced by the Care and Purpose Institute of Child Development at TCU. To learn more about TBRI and the resources mentioned in this episode, please visit child.tcu.edu/podcast.